once the invasive species get introduced, we detect it really too late and it spreads.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome to the Green Hour, a community of innovators, activists, and government leaders in the world of sustainability. Each week, you will hear from a leader in sustainability to help unlock your mind to a greener future. So welcome back to the Green Hour. Today we're with Sydney Rodman, the founder and CEO of Green Revival. We have a really interesting conversation all around invasive species and also about basically how can we look at biomass and how can we look at, you know, different energy sources as we start transitioning to renewable energy. So Sydney, thank you so much for joining us. I'm really excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I think first off, we just want to kind of get to know you a little bit and understand, you know, where you're from and then how you created this business of Green Revival. So could you give us a little background and tell us a little bit about the company?
Yeah, so I'm from and currently based in the Washington, D.C. area. And I wasn't planning on starting a company this early in life, but I saw a problem that I knew I was equipped to solve. So I went to Rice University and happened to join a lab. To me, was the coolest research that I could have done according to my interests. So I was looking at new species of shrimp and bacteria from the cenotes in Mexico. So I decided my first summer job, I'll go do some scuba diving conservation, increase my skills for my future research career. And so I spent the summer in upstate New York in Lake George, in one of the clearest lakes in the U.S., removing a plant called Eurasian water milfoil. There have been people that died just from swimming, getting tangled up in this plant that didn't used to be there. And I worked for this small company just every day underwater weeding. And I saw the amount of waste and wondered what could be done with it. And so when I went back to school, for 2 years, I was thinking, what could we do? Like, what's the highest purpose for, you know, hundreds of different species of plants and what we can make with it? So I started Green Revival to take invasive species of plants that cause wildfires, extinctions, biodiversity collapse, and get more removal to help industries with what they already need, which is biomass.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was looking at this episode and doing some research, obviously we're going to be talking about invasive species a lot. And I think back, I grew up in Dalton, Georgia, which Northwest Georgia, it's known as the carpet capital of the world, big flooring kind of town. But Dalton, I just remember growing up, I would see these vines just kind of overtaking everything. And I remember growing up, my grandparents always told me the story about the kudzu vine and how kudzu had really taken over, right? This I think kudzu had originated in Asia and it had, you know, been brought over to the US. I don't know the story behind it, but in our community, anywhere you go, no matter if it was residential areas, commercial areas, you would see kudzu. And people were just always so annoyed of the kudzu. You know, they'd try to cut it back, but it just kept coming back. So that's the kind of invasive species that I know of, just from living in Northwest Georgia. But I guess I would ask you, you know, what are invasive species? And could you give us some examples of some common invasive species that we might see every day?
Yeah, so the story with kudzu is similar to a lot of well-known invasive species in North America. With increased trade and traveling, someone will bring over a plant or animal that is used to a different environment that has different competitors, different bugs eating the leaves. And so when it comes to North America, there's no way to stop it from growing. It's like a virus. So it plants, animals, algae, and it spreads uncontrollably. So, I mean, for plants, When you have an increased density of plants, that creates wildfires. The Maui wildfires happened because of invasive grass. And the same thing with a lot of California wildfires on the coast. And once the invasive species get introduced, we detect it really too late, and it spreads. So it's something that we have to deal with and use it rather than constantly just clean up the fires or clean up the issues.
It's almost like monitoring a problem or foreseeing a problem before it happens. You said, you know, detect invasive species. And I'm curious about, you know, how do you do that? Because the way you described it is, you know, kudzu, for example, is probably similar to a lot of other invasive species, or, you know, not only plants, but also thinking about animals. With trade routes, you might bring things over from different continents. So when I think about that, I'm like, okay, kudzu came over at some point. Somebody was traveling from Asia, brought it over to the U.S., and over time, it just started to grow and grow and grow. But I think it would be hard to detect that at first, just because, you know, it's just one case in the beginning. So, you know, how do you detect invasive species? And does it take, you know, a while before it kind of gains ground?
Yeah, with plants, it's much more difficult than animals. They're not moving, and most of them are the same color. So right now, there's technology that takes pictures, but then also someone that's trained, a naturalist or an ecologist that has identified these species before, but it's not mechanized or really so systematic that we know everywhere that there's invasive plants, and we can't look at every acre of land to know if it's spreading and how, like, the percentage of cover.
Yeah, it sounds like a really difficult challenge. With, like you said, with animals, I mean, that would be a little bit easier just because you have the movement. And animals, most of the time, I mean, you have some small animals, most of the time animals are larger, so you would actually be able to notice that. But, you know, with invasive species, when looking in plants, you know, the note that I wrote down was, you know, what are they? You know, what are the harms that they pose to ecosystems, the economy, and then also to human health? I think you mentioned wildfires. You mentioned Maui in California. Obviously, those are, you know, environmental, I mean, ecosystem as well as economic, right? Because that's a lot of damage. And human health, I think you just hit all three of them, because that's the smog and everything in the air and the breathability. But could you talk a little bit more about, you know, these different harms in these three realms from invasive species?
Yeah, so just to talk more about just the ecosystem impact, a lot of extinctions happen because of invasive species taking the resources or emitting chemicals that ruin the possibility for a plant or an animal to grow. Increased pollen, the way that a lot of invasive plants are able to thrive is they reproduce faster, and then that affects human health and allergy. Allergies increase. And then there are some plants with roots that impact the sides of our roads and fallen trees. And then also some root systems impact the structure of bridges and homes. So that decreases real estate values and also just the aesthetics. If you're looking at a landscape where there used to be trees, but instead there's just vines covering it, and it looks like kudzu took over, or another plant, and just a monoculture, that affects recreation and tourism, and also in waters, the water quality and fishing. I could go on and on, but those are just some.
Yeah, I mean, to your point on like the landscape, the aesthetic, one summer, I guess this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, I decided that I was going to start a landscaping company while I was home from college. And, you know, one of my big projects I did was my grandparents' backyard. You know, I remember growing up, the backyard we'd always hang out in. And as I got older, it got overrun by a vine, probably kudzu. And, you know, eventually all the grandkids, my family just ended up not going out in the backyard anymore, just because it was just overrun with kudzu. And then this one summer that I was out there and doing the landscaping, I forget what the tool's called, but I was basically chopping the vine down. for weeks and weeks, like hours out of the day. I mean, it was awful. But there's probably a more efficient way to get rid of the kudzu. But yeah, the aesthetic was definitely a lot better once all of that got kind of whacked away, and they were definitely happy with it. But, you know, bouncing off of invasive species, this is an issue. I mean, I think we can all agree that it's a problem. You know, you've given examples of everyday, you know, kind of invasive species that people know. But then if we look at biomass and looking at what biomass is, how biomass might help in this problem, could you explain a little bit about what biomass is, the types of biomass, and also, you know, what are some common uses of biomass?
Yeah, so the way I look at biomass, I just see it as renewable organic material. It's renewable because the energy originally came from the sun, whether it's in a plant form or another type of organism that, you know, makes either eats the energy from the plants or makes it themselves. There's many different types of ways to classify biomass, whether it's the actual type of biomass, whether it's a plant, an animal, the byproducts of animal like manure, municipal solid waste, or just the uses. So biomass to make wood products, so woody biomass. But really, it's just life and the material form of life.
So looking at, you know, invasive species and biomass, given the introduction, now I think this is a good kind of segue to understand, you know, a little bit more about what Green Revival is. Could you talk a little bit more about what the company is and how it looks at these two things, invasive species and biomass, and tries to find a solution that works for everyone?
Green Revival, really what we're doing is moving plants and injecting it into supply chains, whether that's hydrogen, biochar, construction materials, chemicals, wood products. And the point is to use our resources wisely. So more than the amount of invasive plant coverage in the US is more than double the amount of cornfields. It could be between 8% and 43% of all the plant coverage in a given state, wide range, different environments, different plants in states. So like really what we're trying to do is to use our resources wisely so that it doesn't interfere with, you know, forests, agriculture, and in the built environment.
So, and correct me here, but it sounds like to me that what you're trying to solve this huge, this massive problem that we have with invasive species, with the coverage of invasive species. You're trying to figure out a way to basically create a supply chain that takes these invasive species out, and then you can actually transition those into, let's say, energy. Is that kind of how this all works?
Yeah, and you can find it nearby any manufacturing facility. So it's cheaper, it's local, it's more reliable because it's nearby.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, I'm just thinking about supply chain. I work for a large manufacturer, and we're obviously have a lot of inputs into our products. And then also energy as well. So I'm thinking, though, when looking at, you know, obviously there's a large supply of invasive species, but how does it work about actually getting that and actually taking it out of the earth, per se? Because my mind's just going to permitting, like how do you go about it in getting the stuff?
Yeah, so, well, before actually gathering, we have to vet and make sure that the species is, you know, able to supplement and be used in a process that probably didn't use that exact type of biomass before. And then for the gathering part, we work with companies that are already doing the removal. So for example, a landscaper has to take their grass clippings and then bundle it up and ship it away. And so instead of it going into the landfill or rotting in a pile, we are bringing those plants to the highest purpose.
I'm familiar, just in the realm of business I do, of waste to energy or energy recovery. And, you know, for us, it's taking a product, like a physical product that was sold. This product would be end of life. So in the past, it would go to landfill and it would just fill up the landfill. But now this product is actually trying to either be recycled or burned for energy recovery. Just to give you an example. So let's say I'm a manufacturer and I produce plastic products. Or yeah, let's say plastic products as an example. Let's say that these plastic products have a life of 10 years. After 10 years, the usability of the product is no longer good. So basically, in the past, this product was just being thrown away and sent to landfill. But now, let's say this plastic company is actually collecting all this material, collecting it to an amount that they can actually go and either recycle, let's say recycle down into different particles, and then that can go into something else, or the rest of it can be sent to like an energy recovery center where they're going to take this big, let's say 10 tons of plastic material and basically burn it and then capture the energy. And then that energy is used to fuel something else. I might be on the total wrong wavelength here, but that's what I'm familiar with. So I'm curious about, because we're talking about renewable energy and talking about how we can, you know, take these invasive species, solve this problem, and then transition that into renewable energy.
Yeah, so depending on the process, whether it's pyrolysis or gasification or another maybe more complicated proprietary process, we provide the raw material into the beginning of the system, and then the rest of that really supply chain goes from there. And that's replacing a worse input.
I'm sorry. We think about the waste hierarchy. And if I draw it, obviously, like reuse is the top. Like if you can reuse a material, it's the best. Then you have, let's say, recycle. This is just, again, from what we do in my work. Reuse, recycle. And then you have, let's say, energy recovery. And then you have something. And then maybe landfills at the bottom. Landfills, obviously, the worst. Like we don't want to send things to landfill because, for one, there's limited amount of space in a landfill. And for two, you think about like the greenhouse gas emissions that are associated. So it sounds like to me, you're taking this material, you are working with your partners, trying to find the best use of it. And then you're just supplying them with the raw material and then they take it from there.
So I guess the way I see it is that whether it's a synthetic material like plastic or even just a grown crop, you have to use resources to make it and transport it. But with invasive plants and different types of waste biomass, it's already growing and it's already in the system, whether it's in a landfill or sitting where it originally grew and is either still growing or just, you know, someone sprayed chemicals and it's dead in the place. It's already in this large ecosystem, and you know, adding and subtracting chemicals. So by using it, we're changing the land and how the health of the land.
But yeah, I mean, the way you broke that down, it's like you have invasive species. I mean, you gave the statistic, the percentage, I forget, but it's whatever percentage of plant cover is invasive. And if you can take that out of the land, just think about what can go in its place, right? You think about biodiversity, you think about land use. I don't really want to say land use conversion, because I know with land use conversion, you could be talking about building things and you could talk about carbon emissions, but there's a multitude of things that you can do when opening up a space that was using invasive species in the past.
Yeah. So you could do native plant restoration and put back what was there before to keep the ecosystem functioning, you know, at a higher rate. But sometimes there's not enough funding. So it's really just removing the invasive plants and then keeping that land stagnant, which is what mostly happens, because we're not using land that's already infested for the most part.
Well, so you mentioned funding. So I would be interested and how much the public sector or governments get involved in pushing for things like this. Because obviously, I mean, I think anyone in office can look at a problem like invasive species, look at how much it's covering and be like, okay, if this is hurting our economy, if it's hurting the ecological balance of nature, if it's hurting, you know, the human health, it's like, what policy or what funding can be passed for that. So yeah, I don't know the answer to it. I'm just kind of curious about if the public sector gets involved in, you know, pushing funding.
Yeah, they do. $26 billion per year is spent in the just in the U.S., $423 billion annually on invasive species management. That counts detection and then also the, you know, action, whether it's a manual removal, chemical, or biological.
And sustainability. I see these policies like the IRA, the inflation, the Inflation Reduction Act, and then the IJA, which is the Investment Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and then the CHIPS and Science Act. These are like the trifecta right now of policies around sustainability. But those are mainly around infrastructure, like building out charging stations, you know, giving tax credits for things like EVs and solar panels. But I could be wrong, but I don't think invasive species, that type of stuff was in those policies. But yeah, I think that brings up a good point of how the public sector really should be driving this. Because if you think about governments and land, I mean, this could be a big problem for them to kind of fund. And it sounds like they are with, I think you said $26 billion just in the U.S. was the number. And then...
Yeah, 26 in the U.S.
Yeah, which is it seems like a lot. It seems like a lot of money. I would ask, I mean, just from your research, that money, are we seeing like a difference based on the money that they're providing? Are we seeing, you know, invasive species, the percentage of invasive species going down? Like, what is the response so far from the funding that they're providing?
Yeah, so I think one limiting factor is it's really hard to know, like, monitor every year, are we having more or less invasive species? But the rate that they're spreading indicates that it's only getting worse and it's only covering more land. And estimates show an increase in the biomass. You know, the more it spreads, the harder it is to contain, and we're not containing it. So really one of the big assumptions that Green Revival takes is that invasive species, but more specifically invasive plants, are growing in supply and growing in negative impact. So the more we're able to take them and the more money that's used to remove and utilize, the better off like everyone will be.
And on that note on monitoring, like I think I was doing a conversation podcast in the past where we talked about, it might have been biodiversity, or we were looking at how climate change would affect communities. And basically it was like looking 50 years out, maybe sea level rise is what it was. But obviously there's technologies out there right now. I think Google's developed some stuff that you can actually look at and look at 50 years in the future and look at, you know, how will sea level rise be impacting your geographic area? Or how will something like the current pollution in your area impact the area that you live the next 50 years? And a lot of that, I think, is AI driven. So I'd also be curious if, you know, if there's AI that's being utilized right now to kind of detect, monitor invasive species. It's probably difficult because these are like very unique and they could be very small, but yeah, I know AI is kind of driving a lot of things. So I don't know if it's doing something similar in your field.
I'm not sure AI would be able to differentiate different species of plants on a large scale accurately, or even have that goal. So it would be really hard to use AI without like someone being on the ground.
It'd be difficult. I guess, you know, we've given a lot of background. I've asked you a lot of questions just because I'm like really interested in learning about this. Like I said, invasive species impacted my life growing up. So it's, for me, I'm optimistic seeing that someone like yourself is taking it upon yourself in your business to actually go out and find a solution for these things. So, you know, I would ask, because we've been talking a lot about different topics, but you know, what are some projects that you have worked on, or maybe we should say case studies, of, you know, successfully, you know, taking invasive species and transitioning it to something else?
Yeah, so I have seen it been done on smaller scales. We're working on two projects in the early stages. One is hydrogen production for EV charging, and then another one is building materials. So a lot of green building materials are made of hemp, but the hemp supply chains, at least in America, grew a lot more in 2018 with, you know, regulation allowing for more trade, but still supply chains are international or across the country, and it makes it really inefficient. So there are many species of invasive plants that have the same physical properties that can be used in like building materials or insulation. Anything made out of hemp can also be made out of species that have similar evolution, but maybe, you know, a different number of leaves or something that makes it a different species, but has the same central characteristics.
I'm so glad that you brought this up, hemp. I think third episode ever on this podcast is with a guy by the name of Alex Blum, who started a company called Applied Bioplastics in Austin, Texas. And he's doing some really cool work. I mean, this was probably, 14, 15 months ago that I talked to him. But, you know, one of the cool things they're trying to do is use hemp. They're using it in building materials. Yeah, he did some cool stuff. I also talked to Josh Cliffords, who founded a company called Free Water. And Free Water, they're trying to basically use hemp in their packaging, make it a more environmentally friendly product. But that's kind of a backstory. With building materials, I'm glad we brought this up because this is kind of my realm. This is what I work in. So it makes a lot of sense using something like hemp, or we call it biogenic materials, in the actual makeup of the product. Because for us and people that are in the building materials industry, when you can add something that's natural from the earth into your product, into the input, it greatly decreases the embodied carbon. So I would say that, again, from my seat, this is going to continue to grow. I've been in a lot of conversations with, again, about embodied carbon. And just for the audience, so when I say embodied carbon, it's kind of measured, people kind of measure it differently, but it's really looking at raw material extraction, how many emissions are taken from raw material extraction to transport of raw materials, and then to the actual manufacturing. Some people call it cradle to gate. But embodied carbon is a big number that some people look at. And in this sense, using something like invasive species as an input to the product, to the building material, that could greatly drive down the embodied carbon, or we talk about the emissions of manufacturing.
Yeah, it'll depend on the accounting methodology. If you're taking into account the biodiversity impact and like indirect impacts on other species and how they're also functioning to, you know, bring down carbon, and just the reduction of wildfires. I wanted to mention that invasive plants increase wildfire occurrence by 230% and the frequency by 150%. So using that stat to decrease even more carbon emissions in the supply chain will make the and the fact that we're not growing these plants and we're not using, you know, water, energy, or any machinery to grow it, and it's just an extraction process, makes the material way less carbon taxing.
Yeah, wildfires. We did some research recently on. We're looking at research on carbon company strategies for net zero and basically how can you be climate positive or carbon positive. And a big thing that came up was looking at wildfires and looking at California specifically. And I think the stat, I can't remember exactly, but over like a 10-year period, there's like 87 people that lost their lives in California to wildfires. Could be butchering that, but I think that's what it was. And it's like, it's crazy, right? In California, I mean, the occurrence and frequency of wildfires is so high that it's kind of mind-boggling to think about. But what I didn't know and what you've just taught me is a lot of these wildfires are actually spurred from invasive species, because I didn't even know that. And that's like a really, really big thing to understand. But when looking at the future, I mean, what are you seeing, or what are you planning on achieving with Green Revival? And then as well as, you know, what do you kind of see as far as biomass and kind of the future trends and innovations in this space?
Yeah, so for the future with Green Revival and the future of sustainable industries, we're helping differentiate just someone slapping on the word sustainable or natural that maybe doesn't consider the whole supply chain is able to weave through regulation and make a claim that isn't completely honest and misleading. And we're able to show, look, this brand does care about the ecosystem, the biodiversity, the ability to sustain their natural resources and help communities, vulnerable communities, indigenous communities. So I think we're going to have this polarization or this ability to show one company's values much more clearly than another's with biomass. Another thing that Green Revival is a movement. It's not like we're working B2B, but we also want to show, since invasive species affect everyone, you had a story of kudzu. We want to show people that there are ways to make a large impact with very, very simple action. Like anyone can go and volunteer and remove invasive species. People can learn about what's invasive, what's not, in order to maybe not spread it or to make sure that it's not on your boat when you're going into a new lake. And then lastly, I think we're also learning ways to utilize different forms of waste and create circular economies in many creative and different ways. So having Green Revival do that with different industries and different types of plants, I hope will inspire many people to do the same.